Canucks Central Friday. It's Dan Riccio and Bick Nizar here in the Kintec studio. Canucks Central is for Ensign Pacific, Vancouver's premier Chrysler, Dodge, Ram, and Jeep superstore on 2nd Avenue between Cambie and Main, or at ensignpacificchrysler.ca. We're in the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Canucks coming off a victory over the Montreal Canadiens, Les Habitants, at Centre Rogers. What? No? Didn't work?
No, because what's the French word for arena?
I don't know.
It's the Bell Centre. That's why it makes sense.
Yeah, Centre Bell.
But it can't be that for...
It can't be Centre Rogers?
No, what's the... I don't know the French word for arena. Can someone help me?
Arena?
No.
See, I lost pretty much everything.
Oh, you might
I...
actually be right.
I lost pretty much everything that I learned in grade 9 French.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I'm not the person to ask in this scenario.
Okay. But yeah, they won over the Montreal Canadiens.
Centre Rogers.
And it was a good performance. Canucks now 3-1-1 here on the 9-game homestand. We've got a lot to get to, so let's get right into it. It is the Open.
Welcome to the Open.
Four! That's your home! Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. That's how you get in touch with the show. And... you know, last night, Bick, the Open, of course, where we bring you the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and give you our biggest take of the day. We mentioned it yesterday. I mentioned it yesterday during the roundtable. Canucks have leveled up defensively. And really, since the All-Star break. Now, I'm not simply putting this as Elias Lindholm comes to the Canucks and now they are a better team defensively. They were already a really good team defensively, but in lack of being able to point to his offensive numbers and say, hey, that's where he's helped this team, I started to look a little bit deeper at how things have been affected defensively for the Vancouver Canucks, and it is safe to say that they have leveled up on the defensive side of the puck since adding Elias Lindholm to the roster. They now are allowing the fewest shot attempts per 60 in the NHL since he became a Vancouver Canuck. They allow the fewest shots on goal per 60 in the NHL. They've allowed just 2 goals or less in 7 of their last 8 games. And they are at just over 2 goals per game at 5-on-5 since the All-Star break, which is an elite number in the top 5 of the National Hockey League. So I'm looking at all of these things. And yes, you'd still love for Lindholm to have some offense, more offense than he has shown so far. Did have an assist last night. Seems to have a little bit of chemistry with Mikheyev and Lafferty. But adding him and putting him at center, spreading out Miller, Pettersson, Lindholm, and now Blueger through your 4 lines, you don't have a center that isn't defensively adept. You don't have a weak spot that opponents can really truly attack. Certainly not over the course of an 82-game regular season when you have some lesser opponents on tap, but even when they've played LA, when they played Vegas, they didn't have these issues because they were so long through their lineup. And they make it really difficult on teams. Allowed 17 shots on net last night to Montreal. Guess what? The other night, Tuesday night, 17 shots on net. When you look back to Saturday against the Washington Capitals, yeah, it was a tougher performance for them. But still, again, the shot clock and the amount of chances they gave up to Washington wasn't the issue on the night. The last time the Canucks really got beaten up on the defensive side of the puck was that third period against the Colorado Avalanche, to which is to say, like, it's very seldom, very few and far between that these moments are happening to this team since Elias Lindholm became a Vancouver Canuck.
So using him as the marker, right?
The proxy, yes.
Yeah. It's interesting too because the acquisition, we know what they needed and we know what a weakness is. They probably need and still could use one more top six forward.
Yes.
You're not going to solve the problem now post deadline. And I do believe in the theory that, you know, your strength is what gets you to the playoffs, your weakness is what defines your playoffs. So they still have a weakness. But you go look at the acquisition, they technically made a strength stronger.
Mm-hmm.
They were good defensively, certainly vastly improved for where we saw last year. But now, go with this Lindholm acquisition, what is his primary role? Like, even when he had his most success, yes, he scored 40 goals, but it was two other guys driving a line.
It was Matthew Tkachuk and Johnny Gaudreau, who has maybe negative defensive value, and you got to be the guy that takes care of it. You're going to get your points because those guys score, yeah. But you got to take care of the puck.
And Lindholm held up his end of the bargain in mm-hmm. a great way by scoring 40 goals, and obviously fantastic season, plus 60, all that. It was fantastic. But just evaluating the player, you see a really smart player, methodical player, 200-foot guy, something that Rick Tocchet has mentioned over and over again. He is like defensively responsible. And mm-hmm. he's done that part since arriving to Vancouver. Face-offs have been incredible, last night notwithstanding. I think it was 23% last night.
Yep.
But he's held up that end of the bargain. And so the Canucks have made a strength stronger in the acquisition. They didn't necessarily paper over any weaknesses. And to your point, the numbers that you just showcased there, just fantastic run. And over the last 9 games, they've given up less than 30 shots on goal once. Yeah. So, and that was the Colorado game. So it's trending in a way that raises their floor, but I still don't know if it scratches the ceiling that you have to compete with some of the teams in the West.
So the offense is still a little bit of the issue, mm-hmm. and I don't know if you're going to get it from Lindholm. He took a maintenance day today, but we know that there is an injury there, and you could speculate as to what it is, but maybe that's a fool's game. Do believe it's something upper body, but it's to the point where I think this team has added to its strength, and I am seeing why they prioritized Lindholm and getting Lindholm early. Maybe they had a good idea of how difficult it would be for them to end up getting Jake Guentzel. So,
well, timing also wasn't right. Pittsburgh was still in the mix.
Pittsburgh was still in the mix at the time.
You kind of need a willing seller.
But they found a player that helped them on both sides of the puck,
mm-hmm.
right? And added to a strength, but also could help in a weak spot as well, as far as it goes with adding some offense to the team. We haven't seen that part of it yet. I think he's got more offense than he's shown so far. Does it ever come out, depending on this injury? I mean, I have my doubts now, but at least he is giving you this. And you're never going to get a huge offensive output with the spot that he's in the lineup, the wingers he's going to have attached to him because of the spot he's in the lineup, and the fact that he's not playing top power play minutes. So I don't think you can realistically expect for Elias Lindholm to come anywhere close to the point production that JT Miller or Elias Pettersson are going to have. But he is giving you this. He has added to your strength through the middle of the ice. And it's something you're going to need, certainly against Edmonton, certainly against basically anybody mm-hmm. in the Western Conference with the way that Winnipeg, Dallas, and even Colorado play.
Well, it's going to be how they have to win.
Yeah.
And I know you can perceive that statement however you want. Well, you have to play good structured hockey in the playoffs. Okay, certainly. But the way Rick Tocchet said it earlier this week, it felt almost as this is the design of the team.
Yes.
We don't have players that are going to race up and down the ice and create chances, and we'll trade chances, but we'll probably end up on top. It's almost an admission that we're not really prepared to play a certain way.
Yeah.
That when a Colorado torques it up, we can't live in that world.
But does any team win like that in the playoffs? Like, even Colorado a couple of years ago, they were still damn good defensively.
Yeah, but they also were able to turn it up to 11 sometimes.
Yes.
And play at such a speed. The Canucks just don't have fast players.
Yeah.
They can't do that.
They can play fast, but they can never get to that speed.
Yes. Whereas, like, McKinnon, he's gone. And,
yeah.
And now 5 guys on the ice have to figure out how to stop him.
McDavid, same thing.
Yeah, they just don't have that player. And so you've got to figure out a new way to play or whatever works for you that fits your team's philosophy as well. And for the Canucks, I found that statement telling this week, and also the one that he talked about last night where he mentioned about, you know, chipping bodies and, you know, in essence, to me, the takeaway was like slowing the game down. And on the 40 hits last night, he said, you don't have to kill people, but getting in front of people continually is something that they have to do. And you look at with Lindholm now, and if this team intends to win, you don't have to play the same way everyone else does. You don't have to play how Carolina does. You don't have to play how Colorado does. You have to play your way. And their way might be low event defense.
Mm-hmm.
It's not exciting, but that's the reality that's shaping up here as we get into the stretch run.
Well, and good defense can lead to offense. We saw that on occasion last night, certainly. Mm-hmm. But those opportunities against teams in the playoffs that manage the puck better, that are smarter about how they do things, like they're going to be fewer and farther between.
And I think there's a difference between what we saw in the bubble.
Yes.
That defense, that was, we're barely going to come out of the zone and we'll absorb all the pressure. And hopefully we can stop enough seam passes and Demko will be there.
Yeah.
This is more proactive defense, but I still think it's the reality that they want to live in.
That was more, in Italian, they call it with the Azzurri, the catenaccio, where you just essentially park the bus. Mm-hmm. You stick as many players in front of the net as you possibly can, take away any little bit of space, and make it very, very difficult for your opponent to get to the inside. And they did that. They accomplished it, certainly against Vegas, made it very difficult mm-hmm. for them. Demko was the extra layer of defense that they needed to force seven games. And if you remember that game seven, they came ever so close to actually taking a lead in that game and maybe going beyond the Vegas Golden Knights.
They made a one-shot hockey.
Yes.
Now, I think it'll be different this upcoming playoffs.
Well, it's a lot more talented team.
Correct.
And they actively defend, I guess. Is
proactive,
maybe,
yeah.
They are proactive in their defending rather than sort of reacting to whatever the opponent is doing. And last night was a good showing of that, where, you know, Montreal comes in, they're like, this is how we're going to play. We're going to turn it up, and we're going to try and be very aggressive. We're going to add players in on attack and really try to force the issue to get a lead early. And the Canucks had to weather the storm in the first couple of minutes, but once they kind of got it down, you started seeing so many seams open up all across the ice against Montreal, and then there's odd man rush after odd man rush for Vancouver.
Montreal's defenders were not shy about trying to get into the slot.
No.
And forcing the tempo or creeping below the hash mark so another forward could go into the net front area. Like, routinely, there were spaces along the top of the zone. You're thinking, where's the other defender? And there he is skating down. Someone was trying to create some urgency, but Vancouver pushed everything out.
Yeah.
Then, and there were small little gaps, you know, the opening 6 minutes, the power play stretch in the second period where Montreal starts to gain a bit of footing. But Casey DeSmith was up to the task, and the Canucks survived those moments.
So defensively, the decor is a big part of that. And the fact that the Canucks have seven playable defensemen is pretty incredible, considering, you know, what this decor looked like at times, certainly when Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford took over. If you look a year ago today at the roster and what it looked like, it's a lot different than it is now. They spent the summer restructuring their D, and now they're getting a lot out of it, right? Hronek is having a great season. Soucy has been an unbelievable find for this team in free agency. Ian Cole took a maintenance day last night. You don't miss him because you've developed Noah Juulsen into being a credible 6th-7th defenseman in the National Hockey League. Tyler Myers has played his best hockey in Vancouver this year in a more structured environment. And you also added Nikita Zadorov in season. Now, I don't want to bring, like, and I don't want to strike the fear of God into Canucks fans that this may be ending as early as this year, but
strike away.
If you look at the Canucks depth chart beyond this year, you only have Quinn Hughes, Noah Juulsen, and Carson Soucy signed beyond this season.
That's next year's problem, Reach. So I handle most of my problem. That's next week's problem.
That means you are three defensemen short, by my count.
Four. Kind of need one.
Yeah.
One more on the roster.
You need at least seven on the roster. Now, hey, look, there are some guys down in the minors, you know, Guillaume Brisebois, whatever. There are players that they could call up, obviously. But as far as this defense and how well it has looked, it could look a lot different next year. You know, we heard again from Frank Saravalli, Philip Pronick still aiming to have an eight next to his name when you look at the average annual value. Nikita Zadorov, everybody is writing off even the slightest possibility that Nikita Zadorov could remain a Vancouver Canuck because he's pricing himself out of the market with how well that he's played, up to now five goals with the Canucks. It's been really impressive the way that they've restructured it, but also it shows just how short of a lifespan it has right now. As for Zadorov, where are we at with this player? What are we seeing? And are you warming to the idea that he could be worth $4.5 million, maybe $5 million, which is what the speculation is that he could get on the open market?
I like this text here, 650. It's unsigned. We still have a lot of information to learn about these defensemen in the playoffs. And I think that's a great point, right? It's exciting run of 7 to 12 games for Zadorov here.
Yeah.
It's been really impressive. And we got a lot of texts last night in the postgame show. Give this guy 5x5, whatever he needs. He brings an element that not a lot of D-men have, and this team certainly hasn't had, not even just here recently, but for some time. So he's an exciting player. I totally get why people are enamored with him and want to pay what his full freight is. But it's a great point there that are we happy with what we've seen through 70 games, or is this about determining success in the playoffs and using the playoffs as an evaluation to say you're worth what you think you can command on the open market? Because if Zadorov has a bad playoffs, that number might come down. And are you then enamored with the player in that scenario? Because he has had struggles in the playoffs before.
I think back to that Battle of Alberta series, and what Edmonton won at five games. It was pretty short, right? Calgary had a couple of defensemen get injured, and Zadorov and Gudbranson had to be bumped up the lineup. And they started to, Daryl Sutter started utilizing them in minutes against Connor McDavid, and it didn't go well. Zadorov is a fantastic third pair defenseman, but a guy who, if he has to tick up towards 20 minutes, you're going to see the warts a lot more. If he has to play consistently against toughs, you know, go against another team's top line consistently, you're going to see the holes in his game. You know, he's kind of like, he's got a lot more tools, I would say, than Tyler Myers, like offensively at times. But they are similar in that, you know, their best utilization is for them to play probably around 18 minutes a night.
That's a lot of money.
And that's a lot of money to pay for a guy that's playing 18 minutes a night.
And especially when historically, Jim Rutherford teams, the way he's been built them, I'm going to use Rutherford as the example because there's not a lot of runway for Patrick Helvin. But if we assume the philosophies align to a certain degree, you know, he spent as low as 25% of the cap on his D-men, and he's spent as high as was about 32%.
Yeah.
So it hovers in around 28% of the cap towards D-men. Well, the Canucks right now on the blue line are spending 35%. So that number is going to come down.
Yeah.
Significantly. So if you want to live in a world where Quinn Hughes is making just shy of eight, you already have Carson Soucy at just over three. So you're already at about $12-ish million. Or sorry, $11 million. And then you want to add another five there for Zadorov. You're talking about $16 million just on the left side.
Yeah. It's not efficient.
it's a lot of money.
It's not very efficient. And, you know, the idea of Hronik at $8 million a year, I mean, I sort of agree with basically everybody in that, okay, you want $8 million a year? Well, we're going to find the team that's willing to pay that for you because we're not that team. I think that's the approach the Canucks should take. And it's almost as if you've rented Filip Hronik for a year for whatever the price difference may be. You might not get a first and a second round pick in the way that they had to pay to the Detroit Red Wings, but you should still get a first round pick back at the very least, and maybe a prospect of some kind. He's still going to be valued. I know people will say, oh, how many teams are going to have the $8 million? Like, if the Canucks don't have the stomach to pay Filip Hronik $8 million, then who will? There's a lot of teams with really bad defenses that'll want to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And will see Filip Hronik as a solution for their defense. So there will be teams out there that are willing to take that on, especially when they see his numbers and his effectiveness this year. But, you know, there's games like last night where you're just like, this guy doesn't scream $8 million defenseman to me.
Yeah, Tim in Victoria's section about that. It says, hot take, I'd rather see Canucks pay Zadorov next year $4 to $5 million than give anything close to $8 million for Hronik for his play on the defensive side of the puck lately has been dismal.
Yeah. I mean, he's a good defenseman. There are times where he makes some really curious decisions.
Yeah, the best thing I can say to him or about him this year is that he brought the best out of Quinn Hughes.
Yes.
But Quinn Hughes is always going to get the best out of his D partner, too. And at the end of the day, I'd rather just find another passer that can fit Quinn Hughes than overextend myself. Because every duo is going to have a more dominant side. And right now, it's clearly Quinn Hughes.
All right, let's get to the Canuck Central rundown. We're going to have mailbag coming up later in the show. So if you have some questions for the mailbag, send them in 650-650, Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Canucks 3-1-1 on the homestand so far. What should we expect from the next four? It's a little bit of a tougher schedule. They've got Calgary, LA, Vegas, Anaheim. I'm really looking forward to those LA and Vegas games.
Is that tougher?
Okay, fair enough. Fair point.
It was Winnipeg and Colorado that came to town.
Yes. Winnipeg and Colorado were maybe the two were tough. The two tougher opponents.
Although Winnipeg was gas in that game.
I'm not sure Vegas is any good. I'm really not sure Vegas is all that good. We are scared of them because they were the Stanley Cup champions of last year. But everything about them suggests that they are not that team anymore.
It really just depends on health.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. And they're kind of running out of time. Like, I don't know what Tomas Hertl will look like in a Vegas Golden Knights jersey. He's a really great player, but they have 13 games to get him in, integrate him, figure out the chemistry, learn the systems and all that. Passing day gets harder and harder to implement him into the lineup. They'll obviously do it because he's talented, but they live in a world and they've loaded up their line. It's Marchessault, Eichel, Barbashev that play together. But you look at their groupings and it's like William Carrier is playing second line minute. Chandler Stephenson can play that role, but there's no Mark Stone there.
Yeah.
Their deadline acquisition, Anthony Mantha, is a support player, not the lead goal scorer on a second line. Michael Amadio, Brett Howden, who's playing fantastic in the playoffs, but higher up the lineup, surrounded by other good players. These are, I don't know, it's a weird lineup. It's a weird lineup without Hertl and Mark Stone, and Pietrangelo is out right now. I know I said his name wrong, sorry.
Pietrangelo.
There we go.
We'll see later this week, the Vegas Golden Knights, and they're still in a dogfight to make the playoffs, but do have the inside track for that. Vasily Podkolzin got his first point of the season last night. Led team in hits, had six on the stat sheet. Do you think we'll see Podkolzin in playoff games?
Well, who's knocking him out right now? Joshua?
Dakota Joshua.
So Nils Åman is staying in? PDG going in? Okay. I'm hard-pressed to find a reason Podkolzin will come out.
Yeah. Well, he's giving more than, it pains me to say, giving more than Phil DiGiuseppe.
Mm-hmm.
Has the speed, has the heft to really get in and punish. Like, Caden Gooley won and nothing to do with a lot of Canucks last night, but certainly Podkolzin.
He had a rough one, man. And I really like the player.
Yeah.
He had a rough one.
But it was a sign of, like, he took a lot of hits from the Canucks, and it got him really off his game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you see it on the Garland goal. Like, he's just not mentally in the moment.
He's making no decision on that play. He's not going to Bluger. Yeah. He's not chasing back on Garland. He's not even turned to face the puck. He's in no man's land with his back to the play. It was weird.
And that's just because the Canucks wore him down all night long. Podkolzer was a big part of that. Right now it seems to me like he's got the inside track on a playoff spot. I wonder how they utilize it. If Joshua comes back, do they send him back down, avoid having to put DiGiuseppe on waivers and then call him back up before the playoffs? We'll see how they navigate that situation. No decision yet on Ian Cole getting back into the lineup, which was an interesting thing that Rick Tocchet mentioned today. Elias Lindholm did have a maintenance day, so was not at practice. And Jonathan Lekromäki, as Rick Dhaliwal mentioned on the morning show today with Mike Halford, going to visit Vancouver before going out to the World Championships training camp. So he's going to spend about a week, 10 days here in Vancouver, maybe practice with the team, and then head back to Sweden for the World Championships.
Have a skate. Travel halfway across the world for a skate.
I know people. Makes sense.
Yeah.
When you're a hockey player, I guess. Yeah.
It's his vacation.
Is that even enough time to get jet lag? Like, get through the jet lag?
You can get jet lag immediately.
It's like, I'm going back in time 9 hours. This is fine. He's young. He can deal with it.
Exactly.
So we'll see Jonathan Lekromäki shortly here in Vancouver. Coming up, Randeep Janda, Canucks color analyst and co-host of After Hours tomorrow night with Scott Oak.
Ooh.
And Connor Garland.
And co-host of In the Booth. Don't forget that one.
Yes, co-host of In the Booth. Sorry, Batch. And Rick Nash, two-time gold medalist, GM of Canada's World Championship team, coming up. He's going to join us after 5 o'clock as well, plus a mailbag. Lots to come. Canuck Central.